Hello everybody, you are listening to podcast one for the lecture introduction of the artificial intelligence course. Let's go to slide two. On slide two, I summarized the recommended reading for you for this lecture. For this lecture, the textbook has a very good coverage, and I especially recommend to read the introductory chapter number one. It summarizes key concepts of the fields, it talks about the foundations, the history, and the state of the art. And you also see some exercises and tips for further reading. I also included some more reading material for you, and this is at the end of the slide deck. Let's talk a little bit about the beginnings of artificial intelligence. On slide three, we see Alan Turing, and he wrote in 1950, he wrote a very seminal paper and asked a very fundamental question: can machines think? So in his theoretical work, he developed what we know today as the Turing machine, and he saw that this theoretical model that underlies our modern computers has nearly no limits. So everything that is intuitively computable can also be computed with a Turing machine. And for those who have not yet heard this term, a Turing machine is a very simple model. It consists of an infinite tape. On this tape we can write symbols. We have some transition rules. The machine has a read-write head, so it reads some symbol and, according to a transition rule, writes another symbol or wipes out a symbol, for example, and replaces it by something else, and then moves either to the right or left of the tape or stays where it is. And with this simple model, we can describe a lot of computations. And Turing was wondering, if this model is so powerful, can it also be possible that we even can simulate human thinking and intelligence? So this paper triggered, of course, quite some discussion among the early computer scientists. And at this time, it was, of course, a very visionary question that was posed, because when you look at the picture at the right, and I like to show this picture because this is the programming team of the ENIAC computer, and you see how large these computers were in the past, and the computing power was much less than what we have today on a simple smartphone. And you see that women played a very important role as programmers in these early days. So this paper received quite some attention. Turing unfortunately committed suicide only very shortly afterwards. He was prosecuted for being homosexual and really had to undergo some very unfair treatments. And but in the United States, this question was taken further. And in 1956, research from leading American universities met at the American East Coast in the Dartmouth College, and they conducted a summer workshop and talked about a field that would actually try to answer this question. And two leading figures in this field at this time were John McCarthy and Marvin Minsky. They both represent two influential schools and ways of thinking in artificial intelligence. And the name artificial intelligence also goes back to John McCarthy. So John McCarthy, in a workshop discussion that I attended some years ago, he also explained to us the beginnings of this field and the discussions they held at the summer workshop. And he said at this time they discussed various names. So they discussed, for example, the name complex computer applications, because they were interested, for example, in studying computers that could play chess or that would understand language or be able to do automatic translation and analyze images. But of course, he said, and very nicely, so he said, we were young people and we found that complex computer applications was not really a cool name. So he proposed artificial intelligence, which then became the name of this field. But of course, he also had some let's say, reflections when he thought back about all these decades, and he also thought that the name maybe was not the best possible choice because it raises expectations which often cannot be met, and on the other hand, it also raises fears and concerns which may not be justified. John McCarthy represents a school or a direction of research in AI that is very much driven by logical models and approaches, and we will see some of these in this lecture. And this way of approaching AI is sometimes also referred to as the symbolic approach. And on the other hand, we have Marvin Minsky from MIT, and he was more interested in understanding how humans work or in think, how they develop intelligence, and also followed something that is often denoted also as subsymbolic approach. I want to say a few words about these two terms because you hear them quite often. I personally believe that this distinction is, yeah, with these terms is maybe not as good as it can be. And both approaches use symbolic methods from mathematics to describe their methods. But somehow this is something that you can read in the literature, and I want to explain this a little further. So on slide five, let's look at the key idea behind symbolic representations. So in a symbolic representation, we try to find an explicit definition of some objects, for example. Here's an example. A chair can be defined as a portable object. It has a horizontal surface, which is suitable for sitting. And it has a vertical surface that is suitable for us to lean against. And we use logical languages, for example, some formalisms to describe such a representation, and then also apply automated reasoning procedures. But you can very easily see that it's not so easy to describe concepts that come from our everyday life with a symbolic explicit representation by just listing certain properties. We all know chairs which are too heavy that we can carry them around. We have chairs which may not have a vertical surface at which we can lean against. So these problems, of course, ask challenges that have been widely studied in AI. So how can we actually arrive at good representations? And if we cannot describe an object explicitly by listing its properties, what are the alternatives? And one alternative is a so-called subsymbolic representation. You see this on slide six. We take many arbitrary features to describe an object, and we may, for example, also use low-level inputs. We can use encoding of neurons, of pixels in a picture, as you can see it on the slides. And we can, for example, use a lot of examples and show it to an AI system and let the system learn an implicit definition of an object. So, for example, we can show a system a lot of pictures of chairs, and then it can learn a generalization pattern to have an implicit representation or implicit definition of the chair, of the concept chair, without really having these properties stated explicitly. So this is what we usually understand by a subsymbolic representation. And both approaches are very successful today in AI, and we will talk about this in this lecture and come back to these representations in some of the topics that we study. Slides 7 and 8 show you a little bit the progress on key fields of artificial intelligence. On slide 7, we see the progress in neural networks. So the field is even older than the field of AI. Neural networks were studied in a field that is called, or was called, cybernetics. And cybernetics was also a potential name for the field of study that we call artificial intelligence today. And already in the 40s, the first ideas of neural networks were laid, and then we've seen continuous progress over 70 years of research with various breakthroughs, and in particular, in the last decades, we've seen neural networks developed to a stage where we can now apply them to solve very interesting practical problems. And we'll talk about this in the machine learning lectures. On slide 8, you see the progress in game playing and search algorithm. Again, this started in the early 40s. There was a first phase until the 70s. And you see in these numbers above the black line, you see the size of search spaces and the number of potential games that you can play. And this number was really pushed to huge boundaries. For example, in the 90s, we achieved to beat a world chess champion. So some of you probably heard about Garry Kasparov being beaten by the IBM computer Deep Blue. And chess is a game that has a search space of 10 to the 100 of 20. So just to get an idea of how big this number is, the number of atoms in the universe is 10 to the power of 80. So if you now take an atom from the universe and put half an universe into each atom, then we actually achieve or arrive at a search space of this size. So with these modern AI methods, we can even search much larger spaces. And usually these game algorithms combine various techniques from the different subfields of AI. And we will learn about some of them in this lecture. When you look at the games that were studied by AI researchers, then, for example, the until the game of Go, we have so-called perfect information games. So when you look at the Go or chessboard, you really see the state of the game. You know where the pieces of your opponent stand, and you understand the possible moves that you can make. In the last few years, AI has made very impressive progress also on imperfect information games. For example, the game of poker. In poker, you know your cards, but you don't know the cards of your opponent. So this is a so-called imperfect information games. And here we have to deal with uncertain information and also develop strategies how we can successfully play such a game, despite not knowing what our opponents will exactly be able to do. So we will look into some of these techniques and understand better how these algorithms work. On slide 9, I've summarized some of the key fields of AI that I personally see, and we'll talk about most of them in this lecture. But of course, there are also mathematical foundations that AI builds on. And for me, in fact, AI is nothing else than applied mathematics. And it builds on four big fields in mathematical research. So first, we have the algebraic methods with equation systems, for example. We have logical methods. We have numerical methods where we use, for example, differential equations. And we have stochastic methods to deal with probabilities and uncertainty. And I've even added here fields such as mathematical optimization, computational science, where we do big computer simulations, and also the field of statistics, which are not directly belonging to AI, but which really provide us with very important methods that we use to advance AI algorithms. On slide 10, I show you the original Dartmouth proposal. So this is the paper that the researchers wrote to obtain funding for this workshop and to also decide what they want to do in this 2 months long gathering in this college. And the beginning of this proposal is interesting because it shows you some key ideas of the field. The second sentence reads, the study is to proceed on the basis of the conjecture that every aspect of learning or any other feature of intelligence can in principle be so precisely described that a machine can be made to simulate it. So here you see Turing's question coming back and being reflected, and because Turing asked this question, he said, is this possible and can we actually simulate or describe intelligence by computations? So in AI, we also don't know if this is possible, but we simply try. So we assume that we actually can take computers and develop intelligent behavior. And in the second on the sentence afterwards, you see then the various subfields that the researchers wanted to tackle in these years. So they said, make machines that use language, machines that can form abstractions and concepts. So, for example, develop these symbolic representations themselves, solve any kind of problems that only humans can solve, and improve themselves. And improve themselves means they can learn. And of course, we all know that one summer was not enough to make progress, but it really kicked a lot of research activities that continue until today and shape the field of artificial intelligence. On slide 11, you see the relevant research areas today, but I've also listed the fields that were defined in 1956. So 1956, the researcher proposed to do computer simulations, which is today a field that we call more computational science, but which actually started also together with this initiative. Then language was on the research agenda, neural networks, because they were already known and very interesting to the research community. Then they wanted to look at the theory of the size of your computation. So today we know this as theoretical computer science, because early AI researchers noticed quite quickly that somehow some computations are simpler and others seem to be extremely hard. And in particular, with the growing size of a problem, the computations would grow at exponential size. And at this time, nobody understood this phenomenon. And it actually took until the 70s when the theory of NP completeness was developed. Then, of course, self-improvement, so learning was on the agenda, abstractions, randomness, and creativity. These were the original research fields. And then in the colored boxes below, you see the large fields of AI research today, such as, for example, machine learning, knowledge representation, problem solving and reasoning, natural language understanding, visual computing, intelligent agents, and uncertainty. And of course, there are constantly new fields emerging, and the fields are changing and advancing. On slide 12, I discuss the difference between artificial intelligence and cognitive science. So we can take two approaches to study intelligence. We can take a more engineering approach on the left side, where we simply build intelligent software systems. We develop algorithms that achieve behavior which we would consider as intelligent. We solve problems that only humans can solve today and move them onto computers. But we don't really care about human solve problems and about human intelligence. So this is more an engineering approach. Many AI researchers follow this approach. In fact, all AI systems that we have today do not really replicate human intelligence, but develop their own algorithms and solution approaches. So this part of the field is, of course, very much grounded in computer science. It has links to mathematics and economics. When we do more a cognitive science approach, then we want to understand human intelligence. So what really constitutes human intelligence? How do people solve problems? And we want to build models of the human intelligence that then can be used in the computer. And for example, there were also large research initiatives that also try to build models of the brain, and such as, for example, the Human Brain Project. But we also have to accept that we make very slow progress here, that we understand some aspects, but we are far away from understanding human intelligence really in a profound way. So this approach to AI is more part of the neuro and brain sciences, and of course it has also deep links to psychology. In this lecture, we will follow more the left-hand side approach, where we build algorithms that solve problems in their own way. Of course, when we talk about artificial intelligence, then the big question is, what is intelligence? And there is no perfect, widely accepted definition today. And on slide 13, I show you my own working definition. And for me, intelligence is the ability to define and set goals and to develop behavior to achieve these goals. For example, your goal is to complete a university degree, maybe in computer science or some other field, and you set this goal for yourself, and then you started activities to achieve this goal. So for example, you picked the AI course this semester. And again, we can approach this in two ways. We can build intelligent agents and take this more engineering-like approach to artificial intelligence, or we can study this intelligence intelligence by understanding human intelligence. And there we arrive at cognitive science. AI is about three key capabilities. So to be intelligent, we first have to be able to perform some kind of perception. So we have to be able to obtain information from the environment. We use these percepts to perform some reasoning, some cognition. We want to understand the world, how it behaves, and then decide about an action. So being active and reacting in the world based on the percepts and their analysis is a key property of AI systems. And in this course, we will learn methods from all three fields and see various approaches how we can model perception, cognition, and action. On slide 15, I listed major technologies of AI and application areas. We'll tackle many of these in this lecture. And of course, the application areas have become very, let's say, interesting and diverse over the last decade. So we can use AI technology to improve decision making. We can build assistant systems and robots. Today we can buy these systems in a commercial way already. For example, assistants on smartphones or in home speakers. We can use AI to make organizations and processes more flexible and optimize them further. We can make better predictions. We can do automatic translation. Searching information and retrieving information has been advanced by AI technologies, and we also can use AI to obtain new insights and discovery in other fields of science, such as, for example, medicine, chemistry, or biology. So with this, let me finish this first podcast on the introduction lecture, and you can move on then with podcast number 2.